Hello, this is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is November the 24th, 2021, and this has been a very eventful week in the life of Americans abroad because on November the 19th, Congressman Beyer introduced a bill purportedly to simplify the tax filing and obligations of Americans abroad. Now, I have written one or two posts on this, but today I'm joined with my colleagues from C, Karen Alpert and Laura Snyder. And what we'd like to do is kind of take this apart and give our best impression of what this means, who it helps, its strengths, its weaknesses. And we've been talking about this a little bit before bringing you into our discussion, and we're actually going to theme this as a tribute to Clint Eastwood in a movie which I believe was called The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. And we're going to talk about this from those three perspectives. So we're going to begin with The Good. But first, welcome, Karen. Welcome, Laura. How are you?
I'm fine, John. Thank you.
Yep. Hi. Thank you.
Are you excited about this? Is this a great step forward?
I'm not sure I'd go that far.
A small step.
For a limited number of people, it's a small step forward.
I see. Okay. Well, we're gonna have to break this down a little bit. Now, before we get started with this, this is Bill HR 6057. And you can actually find it. We have a blog post on it on the SEAT site, but I think it's helpful to understand the bill in terms of the main bill itself, and in terms of how the bill, in addition to other things, makes amendments to the foreign earned income exclusion, actually expanding it. And I think that's a good way to start, a good lead in, perhaps to the good. So if I can pass this over to Karen for a second. Karen, in a general way, would you agree with the way I just described this?
Yeah, so this bill, it's got two sections that does two different things, and they're somewhat independent. So the first section, and this is what everybody's focusing on, I think, is that there's a simplified form for Americans abroad that meets certain qualifications. The main ones being they have income less than $400,000 and zero U.S. tax liability.
Okay, so now that's on the filing form, right?
That basically tells you the form that you're going to file on, and whether it's going to be, you know, 500 pages of forms, or maybe just one form. So there's a list of forms in the bill that should replace forms 1040, which is the total income tax return, 2555, which is the foreign earned income exclusion, 1116, which is the foreign tax credit, 5471, which is the controlled foreign corporations.
Sorry, say again, 5471?
Yeah, it says that it should replace that, but you have to qualify for it first. And I doubt that very many people who file that form will qualify for the simplified form. 3520, which is a trust form. And 708, which is one that I'm not familiar with, John. Which form is that? 708, do you know? Is that a gift tax?
If I'm not mistaken, I'm not going to guarantee. Form 708 is the form that is filed when somebody receives a gift from a covered expatriate. Laura, if you're online while we're actually doing this podcast, can somebody check that? I think that's what it is, isn't it?
I'm checking that right.
I mean, I don't know what in the world that's doing.
It's United States gift and generation skipping transfer tax return.
It's a gift tax return. So I don't know why we've got a gift tax return in the middle.
Yeah, I have no idea what that's doing in that list of forms, but okay.
Exactly. And other forms. So it's okay. And so a simplified filing. To qualify for that, you have to meet the non-residence tests and have excludable for income that's excludable under Section 911. You have to have some income that's excludable under 911. And you have to,
zero tax owing perhaps.
Yeah, and basically have zero tax on it. To qualify, you have to be a qualified non-resident with income less than $400,000 and a tax liability of zero. And they interestingly get put an inflation adjustment on the $400,000.
Okay, now.
So, but that's just one part of the bill. And that's independent from the second part of the bill, which is to expand the types of income allowed as an exclusion under Section 911. They still call it earned income, but it's not earned. It includes investment income as well. So those are two separate things. And what it does not do is it does not expand the cap of how much you can exclude under Section 911. So you could have income that's above the $108,000 exclusion, but still qualify for the simplified form.
Okay, now let's break this down just a little bit. Okay, let me recap what you said here. So the first thing that needs to be understood is that it really is the creation of a new bill, and part of that is amending the Section 911 foreign earned income exclusion. Mm-hmm. Now, what strikes me about this is that, as you point out, to qualify under the new bill, you cannot spend enough time in the United States so that you would trip the substantial presence test if you were a resident alien. But in addition to that, to get the benefit of the foreign earned income exclusion at all, you still would have to meet the substantial presence test or bona fide residence test.
Yes.
So there's actually two categories of what I would call physical presence attributes on this thing. And what you're saying here is that there's no expansion of the amount that is allowed to be excluded under the foreign income exclusion. So it would still stay at 108,000, just more types of income can be used to get you to the 108,000.
Right.
So but once you're above the 108,000 and below the 400,000, you're still allowed to use the new simplified filing procedure, whatever it is, correct?
As long as your U.S. tax liability is zero, which means you have to do all the computations to figure out what your U.S. tax liability is.
All right. Now, before we divide this into our categories, the good, the bad, the ugly, who's absolutely excluded from this under any set of circumstances? Who does not benefit from any of this?
Well, anyone that's got taxable U.S. taxable income because of their controlled foreign corporation.
Yeah. So any of the entrepreneurs abroad, the CFC people, et cetera. And that is because on the level of the amendments to the foreign earned income exclusion, it's clear that it has not been expanded to include things like GILTI income, et cetera. Would you agree?
Right. There's no CFC income of any sort is included in that list.
Yeah. And then, of course, you've got the problem of, with GILTI and that sort of thing, it's very, very likely that somebody with a CFC is going to have GILTI income, nullifying the zero tax owing under the main bill, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Well, unless I could find a way to use foreign tax credits to reduce that to zero.
That is correct. But we still...
That's going to require a pretty complex return or calculation.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, I think it might be worth pointing out that the proposed amendments generally to the CFC rules are going to make GILTI more likely for American entrepreneurs abroad in any case. So not only are American entrepreneurs abroad excluded from these two particular things we're talking about, the HR 6057 and the expansion of the foreign earned income exclusion, but it would appear independently that the tax situation is going to be made more difficult for them. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. So the good, the bad, the ugly. Let's describe who we believe is in each of these three groups here. So first of all, who are the good, the people who may benefit from this to some degree?
Well, the people who are going to benefit from this are people who have wage and salary income and pure investment income or unemployment, that type, those types of income, whose income is under $108,000, because they can just exclude everything.
All right, now this is an important point, okay? That income is excluded. It's though it doesn't even exist, right? And if it doesn't even exist, that means there's no possibility of tax owing, correct?
Correct.
So those would be, that's the good, and those are the good Americans. Okay, moving on to bad. Would you describe the category who are in a bad, you know, not quite good, okay? But
are, yeah, so... The next level up, people who might get some benefit from this, but not as much, would be people whose income is between $108,000 and $400,000. They're not going to be able to exclude everything, but with foreign tax credits, they may still be able to bring their U.S. tax liability down to zero. And if they can do that, then they will qualify for this simplified reporting form.
Okay. All right. So again, what you're saying is that not all is lost if you are above the $108,000. It just means that the foreign earned income exclusion amount is capped at $108,000. Then you just move into the regular system. And if your income is below $400,000, and if you owe no tax, then you're going to benefit from that to some degree, correct? Or at least you're eligible for new filing procedures.
You're eligible for a simplified filing form. Now, you still have to do all the computations behind it. So I'm not sure you're going to be able to get rid of that accountant that's doing everything for you, because it's going to be very complex.
Okay.
Behind the scenes, the form might be simple, but the computations to figure out what to put on it are not simple.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a 1040 is a very simple form, but I mean, it goes out to schedule after schedule. Okay. And the ugly would be who?
Well, anybody that's got a controlled foreign corporation.
Yeah. I mean, once again, very, very clearly, they're left out and their situation is independently exacerbated. All right. It would seem to me that it's now worth talking about, we've talked about the expansion of the foreign earned income exclusion in a minimally relevant way, I would say. Let's now talk about the new form. So let's say you do qualify for this. What is your reward here? I'm a good American. What's your reward for being a good American?
If you're under the 108,000, then you just list all your income, say it's excluded, and you're done, pretty much. You prove that you qualify by, listing where you've lived, etc. But it should be a fairly simple form if you're under the 108,000.
Plus, should you sign it a good American?
Perhaps. I think where was I going with this? So I think the expansion of the amounts or the types of income that are covered by the foreign earned income exclusion make it less important. So we noted in our discussion earlier, a lot of people who qualify for the foreign earned income exclusion don't use it. They don't use it because for one reason they don't use it is because they generate foreign tax credit carryovers to use when they've retired and their income is no longer earned income. By expanding the types of income that can be excluded, that reason is less relevant for most people who would be earning under $108,000 a year anyways, because their retirement savings income will supposedly be excludable as well as their salary income. So in that case, they can just simplify their life completely by just excluding everything forever. And and not have to worry about the Form 1116, the foreign tax credit computations.
Right. So it's like for those people, they just don't have income. So there's nothing much to do.
That's right. That's right.
All right. So that's a good American. A good American is somebody with no income, nothing much to do. Now let's say
income under 108,000, John, not no income.
Okay. Under 108,000.
But we do need to emphasize that you still have to file every year in order to do this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you're still subject to the U.S. tax law. And if something should happen, you win the lottery or whatever, you know, that needs to be included, and you are subject to U.S. tax on that.
What about, for example, the situation of someone who's had their, you know, bought their house overseas when they were young, held on to it, sold it when they were retired, and have a capital gains of over 108 or over 400,000, and they're not paying a foreign tax credit on it? Because where they live,
they're gonna have a problem.
Yeah,
they pay the homeland. They pay America.
That's right.
They pay America, absolutely. So, transitioning from the good American to the bad American. So the bad American would be what? One between. Well, one over 108,000, I guess. Right.
Well, it's. Anyone over 108,000 can't use the full, can't exclude all of their income under 9/11.
But if they're under 400,000, they can still use the simplified filing procedures if they have zero tax.
Right.
Okay.
But they'll probably need assistance from a tax professional to figure out whether they have zero tax.
Especially if they're going to claim a foreign tax credit, because they still have to calculate what they can claim as a foreign tax credit to know if their tax, either U.S. tax liability will actually be zero.
Right.
Can I just ask you this? I mean, the way this discussion is going, I think that I'm ready to conclude, and I just want to see if you concur that, this is a clear benefit only to those with less than 108,000 in income. Otherwise, it's not much.
Who never sell their house.
Yeah.
And who never have a business and never sell their house.
Yeah, but it's still a benefit to them because under the current law, they would have been paying tax or have to calculate U.S. tax on the other bit. So the house, I mean, that's no change. You know, selling, if you sell the house, you've got the U.S. capital gain. It's just not changing that. So they still have a problem. They may not realize they still have a problem, but they do still have a problem. It's not fixing 100% of their problems, but it is a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
If your income's under 108.
By the way, while we're on the subject of things it doesn't fix, it doesn't change FBAR filing. It doesn't change FIT filing.
Yeah.
Nope, doesn't change any of those. 8938 is not among the forms that they list.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting as well. I mean, I find it very interesting that, you know, they would specify a form 708, but not 8938. And even more interesting that, you know, they would specify the 708 without specifying the 709. I mean, you know, it seems very, very odd.
Yeah. And they've specified a 3520. Does that include a 3520A?
Good question. Good question. Well, I mean, this is part of the bit, you know, this is part of the discussion surrounding the $10,000 penalty fundraiser, right? You know, that had to do essentially the 3520A issue. Okay.
You actually don't know if it excludes the FATCA because normally the FATCA form is filed if you have to file a 1040. And under this simplified form, you're not filing, technically, you're not filing a 1040. So we really don't know what's going to happen to the FATCA form.
I'm not sure what the regulation actually says on that. I mean, that's a very interesting question. You know, obviously one that is, I couldn't imagine it's been anticipated. But I think that we can say confidently that the way this is written, the benefits are far less than people are imagining them to be. And that they apply to a far, far a smaller group of people. I mean, again, it is amazing to me how time after time after time after time, you know, the United States continues to punish American small business abroad. I mean, I just, it's absolutely inexplicable to me. But, you know, when I say punish a small business abroad, I mean, you know, Laura, you had some really, really interesting points. I mean, you know, sure, we categorize these into the good, the bad, the ugly. I mean, so this is dividing people, interesting, into groups, right? I mean, what are your thoughts on this divide and conquer strategy?
Yeah, well, I think it divides us and we actually divide ourselves at the same time. This obviously divides us because it only helps a certain segment of the population and only for a certain time in their life, maybe not for their entire lives. It only helps people who, it doesn't take anybody out of the U.S. tax system. So it doesn't address the problem of accidentals at all. The accidentals aren't acknowledged in this at all. And as we've already discussed, it doesn't address the problem of small business owners. I think it's a shame and potentially quite dangerous when you pursue these so-called solutions that don't really solve the entire problem. Because what you get is a small segment of the population who probably will have a lot of problems alleviated with this. And so they'll go about their merry way while the people whose problems aren't alleviated by this still have their problems. And at the same time, there'll be a perception in Washington and even among Americans themselves, Americans abroad themselves, that, oh, we've got a solution. We don't have a problem anymore. There's nothing left to do. And it's very dangerous. And any American overseas might fall into one of these categories today. They'll fall in another category tomorrow. So I think it's very dangerous to think, oh, this solves my problems, and so I don't care about the rest and we need this, not realizing that tomorrow you might want to have your own business. Tomorrow you might sell your house. Tomorrow you might have, you know, over $108,000 in income or over $400,000 in income. And I would actually expand this, though, more to a more general conversation, which is, you know, some people pursue a solution to FATCA. Some people pursue a solution to GILTI. Some people want to make it easier to renounce. Here we have people who don't want to renounce, are satisfied to stay in the tax system. And so here's a piecemeal solution for them to maybe have a simplified filing and maybe not. Who knows, really? And to me, this is both dangerous and a shame and a waste of time and energy when we could all be together and be working together for a solution that genuinely works for everyone at all moments in their lives while they live overseas, which is simply to move to a pure residency-based system. The rest of this doesn't stop the fight. You have to keep fighting. And I don't see the point in spending time and energy on those things.
Well, not only do you have to keep fighting, but what's interesting about the divide and conquer thing is that it gets Americans abroad into groups that fight with each other.
That too.
You know, that's the amazing thing about it. I am baffled, honestly, that it's so hard to, you know, engage with Congress on this. I mean, why would you engage with them on something that is not a solution to the problem? I mean, it's as though all these people are afraid to come together and say, hey, you know what? Absolutely, U.S. citizenship should not give the U.S. jurisdiction to impose tax on them when they're out living outside the country. But there's something about that. Americans won't do it. Maybe they just don't feel important if they're not being taxed. I mean, it's absurd. Nobody supports pure RBT, as far as I can see, except for, you know, seat, of course.
Yeah. Just as an aside, I was just looking up on the web, Form 708. It does not exist.
Form 708 does not exist?
There is no Form 708.
There isn't yet. Form 708 is the form that's anticipated, I believe, to report gifts from covered expatriates. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, Karen, you're right. When I did the search for it, it came up form 709 instead of 708.
Yeah, exactly.
Since we're this deep into it, what does it say about form 708? I think there's more than it doesn't exist. I think that's the designated form number to receive taxable gifts from covered expatriates, isn't it?
You may be right. I don't know. But if that's the case, that's interesting. I wonder whether they're trying to use this to say that an American abroad whose parent may be renounced and was a covered expatriate and receives a gift from them, maybe they shouldn't have to pay the, what was it, 40%?
I don't know. Yeah, but it's but remember that this is a tax payable by the recipient of the gift, right? I don't know. I mean, it's absolutely bizarre.
Yeah.
But I don't see what form 708, how that relates to the other collection of forms there. While you're looking that up, I mean, I got to be honest here, okay? I see this as a reinforcement of citizenship taxation. You know, when they pass something like this, it assumes propriety, the continued existence of citizenship taxation. It's just providing one carve out for a certain group of people. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Doesn't move anybody out of the U.S. tax system.
But yet the support will be overwhelming.
Yeah, that's already the case.
Why?
That's, well, you can see on social media and off social media, there's a lot of push, a lot of pressure to support this. And as far as I can tell, there's a lot of people who think generally it's a waste of time to contact your congresspeople, but they're willing to contact their congresspeople about this.
So I think if people are going to do that, what they need to do is not to say, I support the bill, but to say, look, what we really need is real residence-based taxation. This is a small step forward. And if you want to take a small step forward first, great, but start thinking about, you know, a real residence-based taxation system, just like the rest of the world.
I think that makes an awful lot of sense, that if this is going to go forward, it needs to be used as an opportunity to redefine or define what the real issue is here and not pretend that this is some kind of a solution, which it clearly is not. It clearly is not. And you can be sure that, I mean, you know, we just scratched the surface today. You can be sure by the time, you know, people spend 3 weeks thinking about what this actually means, it'll be carved down even more.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right, John.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's divide and conquer. And eventually it's going to get to the point where there's such a small number of people that are affected. But then you think you're not affected, and like Laura says, you sell your house. You win the lottery.
That's right.
And all of a sudden, something that wasn't taxable where you live, the U.S. wants a piece of it.
And you lose
we haven't even gotten to one of the interesting parts of this, because I don't think this bill has been thought through very carefully. So in John's post on Citizenship Solutions, he went through and incorporated the amendments to Section 911 into the actual text of the code. And realized that there's a section currently in 911 that says that you cannot exclude income from 402b employee trusts. And that was not removed, even though it seems to be the intention of this amendment that pension payments and payments out of retirement savings should be excludable under 911. And for a lot of employees who have an employer-based plan overseas, they're using 402B to exclude the income as it accumulates, and they will have taxable income under 402B when they start withdrawing.
That's exactly right.
And so unless this is amended to remove that subsection from Section 911, it's going to be useless to anybody who's got that type of retirement plan. And they may not even realize it until they start to get withdrawal.
Yeah, and I think, Karen, that is the, you know, I think the default treatment, or at least I would hope that it is, for these employer superannuations in Australia, right?
For the most part, for people who have an employer account, that's the default.
That's amazing, amazing. Well, this has been a good discussion as always. I'm really sorry that, you know, we don't collectively see this as, you know, as better than I think we do. You know, people have really got to understand that there's only one thing that will solve all people's problems in all aspects, all of the time, you know, something with no left outs and no carve outs. And that's pure residency-based taxation. In other words, the United States does not impose taxation on people just because they're a citizen. That's
right.
The only thing that's
going to
solve.
There needs to be an economic connection between the U.S. and the person, not just a citizenship connection. So, And I think a lot of people object to the RBT because they think it's something you can game, but you can't game where you're really living. And you can set up the residence requirements so that it requires that you actually move your economic activity to another country to be considered a resident of that country and not a U.S. resident.
That's
exactly. A lot of other countries are doing that. It becomes hard to get out, but you can. I mean, you look at Canada and Australia and how they handle residency. It's not easy to break residence.
But it can be done.
But it can be done. And if you're actually emigrating to another country, then the country you came from should let you go.
Yeah. I think that that's very, very clear. You know, the United States has demonstrated they can do so much. I mean, you know, the first country to put a man on the moon, right? They put a man on the moon, but somehow it's too complicated to have a fair tax system. What does that tell you, Karen?
I have to agree, but.
Laura, any closing thoughts? Are you planning a trip to the moon, for example?
Still be subject to US taxation there though.
Well, that's exactly right, because remember what the Internal Revenue Code says: all individuals are subject to worldwide taxation unless you're a non-resident alien. All right, on that note, this has been an interesting discussion, and I hope the people listen to this to understand what this thing is actually proposing and not proposing. And I thank you very, very much. And you'll find some of our thoughts on this, both collectively and individually, at the seatnow.org website, seatnow.org. All of us have written on various aspects of this.
Okay, well, thank you, John.
Yes, thanks.
All right, this has been great. Thanks a lot.